Hello, everyone. And Kate, yeah, we love having you here. I'm really, really grateful that you're here. I might start that way every week. I don't know. But that's how I feel. So happy that you're here. And it's good to see everyone. I'm happy that you're all here. You guys know that, right? I think that we are so blessed to have one another and to be able to join together in the way that we do in awakening together. So it's really good to see you all. And as Ken mentioned, we are here now for the 7 Steps to Awakening. And tonight I am beginning with quote 746. For those of you who like to follow along in my journal, I am posting the link to quote 746 in my journal here in the room. Of course, the quote itself is actually in the book, The 7 Steps to Awakening. My journal is what I wrote as I contemplated the quote. And before we get started tonight, we will start with a song. And the song that I'm playing, I'm sure you've heard it before because it's one of my favorites. Every now and then I like to go back to my favorites, and this is one of them. This one is by Stephen Walters, and it's called Nothing Less Than Everything.
I was walking down a lonely road, looking for a place to rest. There was no escaping from this ache inside my chest. Then I got down on my knees and begged for mercy, and I raised up my hands, and I knew the answer, even as I asked the question of just how much this love demands. And it's everything, everything, nothing less than everything will do. And when everything is burnt, I will take these ashes and offer them up to you. Shiva, Shiva, Mahadeva, Mahadeva. Shiva, Shiva, Mahadeva, Mahadeva. I was walking down a lonely road, looking for a place to rest. There was no escaping from this ache inside my chest. Then I got down on my knees and begged for mercy, and I raised up my I knew the answer, even as I asked the question of just how much this love demands. And it's everything, everything, nothing less than everything will do. And when everything is burnt, I will take these ashes and offer them up to you. Shiva, Shiva, Mahadeva, Mahadeva. Shiva, Shiva, Mahadeva, Mahadeva. Everything, nothing less than everything you do.
Lovely. So that means that we're ready to begin now. So the quote that we are looking at tonight is 746. It is from step 3 in the 7 steps to awakening. It is still from the Yoga Vasistha. The men of wisdom perceive that the entire creation is hidden in the ego sense. The men of wisdom perceive that the entire creation is hidden in the ego sense. So what I'm going to do is go directly to my journal. And the journal entry says, "One who has awakened to the call of the heart knows the person self is a false idea that hides the reality of present shining self." And that present shining self in my journal is hyphenated as one word. Present shining self. Today, by the way, when Kathy was teaching earlier today, she was reading from, it was one of Michael Langford's collections. Which one was it, Kathy? Something about your soul. I can't think of the name of it. Experience your perfect soul. And then, Kathy, there was a term that you were using over and over again, something about knowing. Do you remember that? It was a hyphenated term just like this, something about truth, knowing, if you remember that. Self-truth knowing. I loved that. Every time you said it, that's it. Self-truth knowing. And I think present shining self and self-truth knowing are the same. Because, present shining, right, that refers to knowing. You know, it's present shining, therefore I can know it, right? So present shining self, which is hyphenated in my journal, is the same as self-truth knowing. And Kathy, who was it you were reading today? Who were the quotes from? Norman Cooper. Yeah, so self-truth knowing in Norman Cooper's journal is the same as present shining self in Regina Donaker's journal. Yeah, it's the same. And it's interesting how sometimes we have to kind of create words by hyphenating other words together, because there really isn't a word that captures what we're trying to communicate. So we have to create a new word out of existing words. So again, the journal entry says, "One who has awakened to the call of the heart knows the person self," by the way, that's also hyphenated, "the person self is a false idea that hides the reality of present shining self." And I think one reason person self is probably hyphenated in my journal is because the person is not really a problem. The problem is the person self. The difference between the person and the person self is that the person self is when I think I am the person, right? The person by itself can just be an experience, a temporary experience. So the person is not a problem, just like a thought is not a problem. Believing the thought, that's the problem, right? Right? Believing the thought is the problem. The thought itself is not. The person itself is not a problem. Believing the person to be me, that's the problem. That's what really has to be removed. I think, if I remember correctly, that once upon a time, I thought that the person had to be removed. And I bet many of you guys have felt this as well. And by that I mean, You know, whatever makes up this Regina thing, you know, there are things that make up this Regina thing that are different than, for example, the Cheryl thing, you know, or my boyfriend, the Ron thing, or the Kathy thing, right? Each of these things are different. And I used to think that uniqueness that is this Regina thing, that it had to go away. That the person was the obstacle. It isn't really the person that's the obstacle. It's the person self. Believing that I am this Regina thing. And one thing that I really love about Regina now is that I get to experience her without believing her. I still get the full flavor of Regina without believing her. I can see the world through her point of view and understand that I'm seeing the world through her point of view without taking her point of view too seriously, you know, without, you know, and understand that all other points of view are equally valid and equally invalid, both. All other points of view are equally valid and equally invalid. And that's when this gets fun. That's when this gets fun. As long as we think that I am this person and we take these thoughts way too seriously and we have to in some way defend our points of view and like there's something wrong with me if there's something wrong with my points of view, you know, that messes everything up. That makes everything all yucky. That creates what is often called suffering. But if I can just let Regina be Regina, and enjoy her from this intimate experience of watching, knowing that Regina is going to end, and trust me, I'm well aware that Regina is going to end, everything is okay. Remember what A Course in Miracles says in the introduction. Nothing real can be threatened. Nothing unreal exists. Herein lies the peace of God. Well, this Regina thing, you know, Phyllis saying nothing is wrong with Regina. You know, I love Regina. And it would be crazy for me not to love Regina because I have this very intimate experience with this personality. You know, like this Phil thing that just typed in the room. My experience with the Phil thing is not as intimate. Now, I still really like the Phil thing, and it would cause me some suffering if I didn't like the Phil thing, right? It would cause me some suffering, undoubtedly. You know, every now and then Phil might type something on the board or say something in the mic or type something on my Facebook wall, and I would feel that little, ugh, you know, that little thing that you feel. So not liking the Phil thing would cause me some suffering. But can you imagine how much suffering would be caused if I didn't like the Regina thing? You know, think about it. Well, some of you don't have to think about it. Some of you know because you don't like the personality that you are most intimately involved with in this experience. But when we don't like the personality that we are most intimately involved with in this experience, it's because we think we are that. Because we think we are that. That's the only reason that we wouldn't like it. If we can see all of the personalities as just these temporary, delightful characters, we can enjoy each and every one of them. You know, Donald Trump obviously is one of the most popular characters to talk about right now, at least in the U.S. of A. And maybe some of you don't like him. At least that's the feeling I get sometimes when I read Facebook comments and stuff. But if you really look at Donald Trump, there's nothing there not to like. He is delightful. He is delightful. You know, he's got all kinds of facial expressions that he makes. He has, you know, all kinds of points of view, and this may sound like an insult, but I don't mean it as one. He's like a 3-year-old. And that a three-year-old, you know, if a three-year-old is mad, he acts mad. And then when he's happy, he laughs, right? He's like so in the moment. And Donald Trump is like that, you know, like, you know exactly how he's feeling. He expresses it immediately, right? He's adorable. He's adorable. Of course, some of the people who like Donald Trump don't like Barack Obama. But he's just as adorable in a different way. Right? Not in the same way. There's maybe nothing really, other than the fact that they're both males. You know, there's nothing really that Barack Obama and Donald Trump have in common. They are really very different. But they're no less lovable. You know, Barack Obama has this lovely softness about him. You know, he has this almost like a contemplativeness about him. Like he really contemplates things before he speaks about them or before he makes a decision about them. Right? So where we have, you know, Donald Trump acting out whatever he's feeling right now without any contemplation at all, as far as I can tell. He feels it, so he acts it out. You know, Barack Obama is the opposite. He really takes time to look at how he feels and be with how he feels, and he thinks about how he wants to talk about how he feels, right? They're very different. And I love them both. Just like I love Regina. And I love Cheryl here, you know? The only thing that gets in the way of us loving is thinking that we are, that I am, this person's self. When I think that I am this person's self, I first find things to judge about me. I find things about me that I do not like. And then the next natural thing to do is to start projecting my judgments outward, and I find things about other people that I do not like. So the only way to really love Donald Trump and Barack Obama, because it does seem like most people have to be on one side or the other, doesn't it? The only way to really love, genuinely love Donald Trump and Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and whoever else we want to throw into the mix is to realize that you're not the person self. That's what hides the truth. That's what hides the ability to love everything. It's the belief that you are the person self. So again, the quote from Yoga Vasistha says, "The men of wisdom perceive that the entire creation is hidden in the ego sense." The entire creation is hidden in the ego sense. Ego sense being the equivalent of the person self. The entire creation is hidden in the person self. Or we could say hidden by the person self. Remember what A Course in Miracles says, right? Nothing real can be threatened. What is the real? Someone asked me that question today in the Ask Regina Facebook group. What is the real and what is happiness? And it's very, very, very difficult to say what the real is. Not because the words aren't pretty good words, but because words hit the intellect usually before they hit the heart or the intuition. And only the heart or the intuition can know the true self. Only the heart or the intuition can know the real. Or said another way, actually, because the heart and intuition are also words, they're symbols. Only the real can know the real. The unreal can't know the real. The ego sense or the person self can't know the real. Only the real can know the real. But what's okay about that fact is the fact that every one of us is the real. And it may be perceived as we have the real within us, and that's okay. You know, if we're still on the surface of the personality self, you know, the experience may be that we trust that we have the real within us, and that's okay. But we are the real. And when we know ourselves as the real, we also know everyone and everything else as the real too. We still see the characters though. And this gets back to the initial confusion I started talking about. You know, my confusion was, and I think, you know, many people have this confusion, not just me, that somehow the personality has to go away. That somehow Regina's going to quit being Regina. You know, Cheryl's going to quit being Cheryl. Kathy's going to quit being Kathy. Phil's going to quit being Phil. Donald's going to quit being Donald. Barack's going to quit being Barack. But I love to use two enlightened masters as an example that that's just not true. Two masters that many, many people really trust genuinely that, yes, these two people were enlightened. If anyone was, they were. And I'm not referring to Buddha and Jesus, because Buddha and Jesus, for most of us, if not all of us, are imagination, right? We don't really know them directly. These two guys are also imagination, but we can know them a little more directly because they lived a little more recently, and so their writings are better preserved, their sayings are better preserved, and they're captured on film, right? So we can see them a little better. I'm referring to Ramana Maharshi and Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. We can see them a little better because they lived a little closer to our time. Most people that really know Ramana Maharshi and Nisargadatta Maharaj agree that these gentlemen were enlightened. That doesn't usually come into question, at least not with the people I meet. But would you say that their personalities were gone? Or would you say there were distinct personality differences that you can point to? I would say that there were distinct personality differences that I can point to. That's what I would say. Right? Ramana Maharshi was more like Barack Obama. Nisargadatta Maharaj was more like Donald Trump. Right? Ramana Maharshi was the quieter one, the more contemplative one, the one who used words more carefully, right? Nisargadatta Maharaj was the one that just acted whatever he was feeling in the moment, right? Laughing one moment, yelling and screaming the next. And yet both equally enlightened. How could that be when they were so different? You know, Ramana Maharshi, the vegetarian, Nisargadatta, the meat eater, cigarette smoker, right? Ramana Maharshi never having any interest in physical relations at all, just no interest. Nisargadatta married with children, but equally enlightened. So the person is not the problem, nor does the person disappear. For as long as the body personality lives in this present world time, right, the personality is what the personality is. You know, Regina will be Regina. Cheryl will be Cheryl. Kathy will be Kathy. Phil will be Phil. And we'll enjoy each other. Just like you enjoy a bouquet of flowers, all the different flowers in the bouquet. But the belief that I am this, that's where things get muddy. the belief that Regina's point of view is my point of view, that's where things get tough. Regina would probably like Barack Obama better than Donald Trump, I think. Is that true, Regina? Right now I'm so far away from her. When I teach, I'm so far away from her, it's hard for me to really see. But I'm pretty sure Regina would like Barack Obama better than Donald Trump. And so I can see that in her. I don't need to deny that. I don't need to hate that. I don't need to think she's right. That's the person. That's the character. That's the way it's drawn in this cartoon world. What I do is not take her too seriously. And when I don't take her too seriously, her points of view weaken. They become very, very thin. Right? If I don't enliven them by casting attention and belief, they become very, very thin. But sure, I can still see Regina's preferences. One thing that's happened to me recently in the last month or so, I had a brief experience Sunday while walking through a threshold. I was walking from my bedroom into my bathroom, and I was crossing through the threshold from the bedroom to the bathroom. And I became aware of Regina's death. And something shifted in that moment. And that Regina became much less real to me than she was the moment before. And although I've always known at, you know, we'll call it an intellectual level, you know, we all know at some level that the body personality is going to die, right? At the same time, at least in my experience, that wasn't really, even though it was there, it wasn't really thought about. I mean, it never has been. You know, maybe some people walk around worrying about the day they're going to die or something, but that just wasn't really thought about. Death was not a real thing to me, ever, in this lifetime anyway. But when I had that knowing of Regina's death as I passed through that threshold, the mortality, the temporariness of Regina became more real than I'd ever imagined it would be until the moment of death, you know, the moment of physical death. And what's crazy is that what came out of this scene of death, it felt like a scene into her death. I don't know how else to describe it. A scene into her death. So what came out of this scene into her death was freedom. Was joy. It was almost as if prior to seeing her death, a pretending had been happening, not consciously, an unconscious pretending had been happening, that I was Regina and that Regina had to last forever or I wouldn't. An unconscious pretending. And when I saw into Regina's death as I passed through that threshold, that was severed. It became okay for Regina to die, literally. No longer a problem because there was no longer a relationship between me and her. It also was okay for her to live for as long as that happens. And for her to live in whatever way that she lives, in whatever way this life happens, it's all okay. So the quote says, "The men of wisdom perceive that the entire creation is hidden in the ego sense." What is that entire creation then that is hidden by the belief I am the person? By the person self. What is that entire creation? Is it the trees? Is it the bees? Is it the birds? Is it the sky? Is it the sun? Is it all of the other people? Yeah, that's it, Kathy. It's self, truth, knowing. That's the creation. That's what's hidden in the person self. That's it. Which, in my journal, was called present, shining self. In fact, let me just go to my journal again. One who has awakened to the call of the heart knows the person self is a false idea that hides the reality of present shining self. Self, truth, knowing. So I'm going to move on, actually. I think that we all get that, at least. In fact, it kind of reminds me of the song we were just listening to, the Stephen Walters song, "What Does This Love Require? Nothing Less Than Everything," right? Including the belief that I'm this person. Including the person self, right? Nothing less than everything. It's not everything but me. It's everything. That's what's required. Someone asked Nisargadatta, I want to say the other day, but it wasn't the other day. It's just I was reading it the other day, so it happened for me the other day recently. Someone asked Nisargadatta, how do we get rid of this person self? Hold on one second. Let me see if I can find his answer. I'm sure he's near here. Yeah. How is the person removed? That was the question. How is the person removed? And again, remember, the personality stays. So when this person says, how is the person removed, we're not talking about making everybody vanilla, right? We're still going to have all the different flavors of ice cream. We're talking about how do you remove that belief that I am this person? How is the person removed? Nisargadatta Maharaj. By determination. Understand that it must go and wish it to go. It shall go if you are earnest about it. And I would say the value in the sharing that I've done in the last 30 minutes is that if we contemplate the sharing that I've done in the last 30 minutes, we can reach that understanding that the person must go. And again, how do we remove the person? By determination. Understand that it must go and wish it to go. It shall go if you are earnest about it. And I think I mentioned when I was reading this the other night that that in NTI it says, pray for your end. Pray for your end. So it's really the same teaching as Nisargadatta Maharaj. So I think what I want to do is I feel like, you know, sticking with gentle healing as our idea here. Because I've noticed that although Kate describes how vigilant she was, and I was also very vigilant, you know, Kate and I must have had this ability to be that vigilant. I've noticed that for a lot of people, that much intensity just brings up so much fear that it is stalling. It's stalling rather than propelling forward. And so because many people actually aren't ready for that level of vigilance, I really enjoy that we are going about things at a gentle pace here at Awakening Together. And so the gentleness from this teaching is begin to understand that the person must go, the belief that you are the person. Just let that marinate. Just let that be. And if you just let that marinate, just let that be, that alone will carry you to the next step. All right, so I'm going to move on then to 747. And I'll put that link in the room. There you are. There's 747 to the journal. This is quote 747. If the I-ness, if the I-ness or ego sense ceases in you, you will remain like the space and there will be peace. If the I-ness or the ego sense ceases in you, you will remain like the space and there will be peace. Well, of course, one idea that crosses the mind at some point with every spiritual aspirant is that this idea somehow that if the I ends or if the ego sense ends, I end, right? Like that's my death. I end. And what's really interesting about this particular quote, if you pay really close attention to it, is it says, if the I-ness or the ego sense ceases in you, you will, and for now I'll just say dot, dot, dot. There's still something there that can be referred to as you. The belief that I am the person has died, but I have not died. If the I-ness or the ego sense ceases in you, you will dot, dot, dot still be, right? I'll get to the rest of the sentence in a moment, but this is important to also let marinate and sink in. The understanding that the belief in the person as me must go, but I will not go. What I am will be revealed, actually. That self, truth, knowing comes into place. That present, shining self is noticed, is aware, you know, become aware of that as me. If the I-ness or the ego sense ceases in you, you will remain like the space and there will be peace. Remain like the space and there will be peace. Prior to the spiritual path, the best experience I had of that, remaining as the space, was going on vacation. And I'll tell you why. Because when I was at home and when I was at work, my mind was always full of all the problems I perceived, all the things I had to do, all the things I had to manage, you know, just full, right? Busy, busy, busy. Yeah, the mind was full. I mean, the body was busy too, but the mind was really full. You could say the person was very heavy. When I went on vacation, and I always just naturally did this, when I went on vacation, what happened was I forgot everything. And I was just there. Just in the moment. You know, being a little Donald Trump. You know, just being whatever I was feeling to be, you know, loving this and looking at that. And there was this spaciousness in my experience that I wasn't noticing, but it was most definitely there. I'll tell you in a moment when I came to notice it. There was this spaciousness in my experience because I dropped so much stuff whenever I went on vacation. And then when I would come back to my, you know, quote, normal life, I would take on all that stuff again. I have to worry about this and think about this and control this and change this. And I was heavy. And so I would immediately start planning my next vacation because I thought that the vacation caused the spaciousness. The vacation didn't cause the spaciousness. It was my willingness to leave everything at home when I went on vacation. If I had gone on vacation and carried it with me, which a lot of people do, right? A lot of people take those laptops with them on vacation and they're every moment on their laptop, on their phones. If I had done that, I wouldn't have had the spaciousness on vacation. But I always had a willingness. I always left everything behind. I forgot everything. And for the week or the 2 weeks that I was on vacation, I was in the moment. I was spacious, I was joyous, I was just being. When I discovered that this was the case was after I had been on the spiritual path for a little bit, you know, so a little bit of awareness was coming in about, you know, what the ego sense is, what the ego feels like and all of that. And I happened to go on a vacation and I wasn't, of course, not thinking about it. I was just on a vacation and I did what I always did when I went on vacation. I forgot everything and I'm walking along with that spacious, happy feeling and then it hit me. Oh my God. This is why I love vacation. I'm not carrying any burdens. I'm just spaciousness. I could feel it. In fact, my mind felt empty. But it wasn't an unfamiliar feeling because it was the feeling I'd always had when I went on vacation. That's it. It's dropping everything else. Forgetting everything. Yeah, forget everything. Be the spontaneous moment and nothing else. That's what vacation was for me. But that's what happens when we let go of the person self as the belief, right? When we let go of the person self. And so what's really, really nice about letting go of the person self is you can be on vacation all the time. In fact, Cheryl asked me a question a while ago, a very simple question. It's not a hard question. She asked me, she said like later this week she'd probably make shakes. And she wanted to know if I was going to want one. And do you remember what I said to you, Cheryl?
Yeah. Ask me when you're doing it.
Yeah, ask me when you're doing it. I said, I can't put myself in the future. Yeah, ask me when you get there. I can't put myself in the future. See, once upon a time, I would have tried to make that decision for her. In fact, believe it or not, and if you guys look carefully at yourself, you can see this. There actually would have been maybe even a guilt in trying to make the decision for her. Like, I didn't want to let her down. Here she was trying to be nice to me. And my guilt doesn't want to let her down. So I would try and decide right now. It actually still would start creating a burden. I'd be picking up a burden. I would start trying to decide right now if I'm going to want to shake in the future or not. Boom, I'd pick up a burden. There would be less spaciousness in that moment. By just telling her, you know, I don't know. I get to remain spacious. So the trick is to let go of all of that thinking that is attached to the idea that I am this person and this life are serious business. You know, like it's serious business whether Cheryl likes me or not. It's serious business, you know, whether, you know, when she's being nice, it's serious business that I'm able to somehow meet my end of that commitment and tell her whether I'm going to want to shake or not at some point in the future. That's where our pain comes from. But if we could just be on vacation all the time, which means forget everything, just be with what is, our normal everyday life is still a vacation. Even work, you know, working. You know, some people, when I use the word work every now and then, people say, oh, don't say work. You know, like that's a bad word. That could only be a bad word if you're afraid of work. There's nothing wrong with work. Work is just as much fun as anything else. Every one of us, whether we know it or not, we're doing the work that we choose to do. Work's great. Work is great. It's really wonderful. Right? The only time work is not great is when we pick up all of those burdens, usually, again, based on guilt. Worrying about how other people think about my work, fearing whether I'm going to get this done right. Or, you know, Jacqueline talked beautifully about that this morning, right? About what she's done or what she hasn't done, right? That's the burden. Am I letting other people down? Am I appearing good enough? Am I appearing smart enough? Are they beginning to see what a loser I really am? That's the burden. Oh, my God. Work is not a problem. Thinking is the problem. Believing is the problem. Work's just another joy that we have as humans. You know, I saw The Jungle Book on an airplane this year, or last year, I guess, 2016. I think I was probably going to Ireland or coming home from Ireland. I'd never seen The Jungle Book before. And I really got a lot out of it, you know, meaning in a spiritual clarity way. And I won't go through all the lessons I got out of The Jungle Book. It's not Jungle Book movie discussion group right now. But one of them was, if you watch The Jungle Book, the young, what they call him, man cub, young man cub, he loved to work. Did you see that? He loved to have a challenge. How am I going to get the honey out of the honeycombs without getting stung by the bees? Ooh, I can take banana leaves and I can sew them together and create this suit of armor. And then I can go up and get the honey out. I mean, he loved to work. He loved to create. That's work, building tools, right? He loved it. He wasn't carrying the burdens of the mind. He was being in the moment. He's being a cute little Donald Trump. Because if you really watch Donald Trump, he's in the moment. I mean, he carries stuff too, I know.
And he doesn't care about what others think.
And he doesn't care about what others think. We could learn a lot from Donald Trump. he's really very cute.
That's what I like about him. You see that sense of freedom coming.
He does not care.
Not
that he isn't in his wrong mind. I mean, I see that, you know. But still, you get my point. You get my point. So again, the quote that we're looking at right now, 747, if the I-ness or the ego sense ceases in you, you will remain, that's the important part right there, because the ego will try and tell you you won't. You will remain, ... Let's just let that marinate. If the I-ness or the ego sense ceases in you, you will remain like the space. Or we could say, like Regina was on vacation. Right? I'll remain like Regina. That happy vacation in Regina. Right? I will remain like that. If the I-ness or the ego sense ceases in you, you will remain like the space and there will be peace. That's a promise. Do you hear how this is said? It doesn't say, and you might feel happier. Right? It says, and there will be peace. In spaciousness, there is peace. I think that when Jesus talked about becoming like a little child, that was his way of referring to the spaciousness. Right? It's that mind. I mean, I remember, you know, again, way back before I was on the spiritual path, back when I was the busy person and I had to get to work on time and I had to get Jasmine to the daycare on time and all that pressure I put on myself, right? Mornings were hell at our house, I'll tell you. Mornings were hell. Evenings were hell too. But I remember trying to drag that 2-year-old to the car and get her in her car seat so we could get where we had to go and her stopping just to look at a rock. You know, Jasmine, come on, we got to get in the car. You know, there's an ant. Jasmine, you know, that's the spaciousness. Right? She was demonstrating the spaciousness. She wasn't worried about getting to daycare on time. She saw a rock. That's like Regina on vacation, isn't it? The same mind. So Jesus said that we needed to become like little children to inherit the kingdom of God. He was talking about the spaciousness. Innocence. You know, people misunderstand the word innocence because they think of innocence as the opposite of guilt. And probably as long as one believes in guilt, that idea that innocence is the opposite of guilt will linger. It's kind of natural. If you believe on one side of the coin, you're going to believe in the other side of the coin. So if you believe in guilt, you're going to believe in innocence. But innocence has nothing to do with guilt. Innocence is not guilt's opposite. It has literally nothing to do with guilt. Innocence is another expression of the spaciousness. That's innocence. When you're holding nothing, you're holding no ideas, you're just open beingness. Right? Self, truth, knowing, and innocence are the same. Present, shining self and innocence are the same. It has nothing to do with guilt. It's not its opposite. It's another word pointing to the spaciousness. So again, the quote says, 747, if the I-ness or the ego sense ceases in you, you will remain like the space and there will be peace. Become like a little child and you will inherit the kingdom of heaven. So the journal entry says, I don't think I've read the journal entry yet now that I'm looking at it. I've done all this talking without even looking at the journal entry, so it's a good thing we have a few minutes left. So here's the journal entry for 747. No mind does not mean no awareness. No mind means open, spontaneous, free. By the way, we have another hyphenated word. There we go. Open, spontaneous, free. Another hyphenated word. No mind does not mean no awareness. No mind means open, spontaneous, free. So we have to ask, what is mind in the sentence no mind, right? Because again, if you grab a good dictionary and you look up the word mind, you're going to find 10, 15 definitions of mind. And so we can't assume that the word mind means the same thing every time we see it in a sentence. Not if it has that many definitions. You just can't, right? You have to realize that it's a floating word. It can mean different things at different times. So when we say no mind, what does no mind mean? Does that mean no brain? Because one of the definitions of mind would be the equivalent of brain. Does no mind mean no brain? Well, no, of course not. Right? That's not what no mind means. Does no mind mean no personality? Everybody's vanilla. What were those people in Star Trek? Remember those people that all were exactly the same? I don't know the word. I want to say rogue or grogue or something like that. Some of you guys might know if you're Star Trek. The Borg. That's it. The Borg. No mind does not mean the Borg. All right? I used to think it did. No mind does not mean the Borg. Right? Where all the personalities disappear and everybody's exactly the same.
The Stepford Wives.
The Stepford Wives. And no mind does not mean no awareness. That would be death. That would be, you know, death. Ceasing to be. No mind does not mean that. So what does no mind mean?
Freedom.
Yeah, it's talking about Regina Vacation Mind. No mind means Regina Vacation Mind. We have another hyphenated word. Regina Vacation Mind. It's the open spaciousness. Open, spontaneous, free. It means you're not carrying the burdens of, oh no, do I want to shake in a couple of days? You know, you're not carrying the burden of all of the stuff that you worry about. What do other people think about what I'm doing or what I'm not doing, right? It's all that crap. That crap is mind. In this sentence, that crap is the equivalent of the word mind. So no mind means none of that crap. And when you take that and you throw that away, you get open, spontaneous, free. You get what remains. You get self, truth, knowing. You get present, shining self. Sat, chit, ananda. Funny how we, no monkey, I was going to say, funny how we always describe it with three words. Here's another three words. No monkey mind.
One of my favorite is present moment awareness.
And Cheryl's saying present moment awareness, right? So just
being.
Just being.
Not doing. Being.
Yeah, yeah. So no mind does not mean no awareness. No mind means open, spontaneous, free. And remember, the person, the idea that I am the person, and the mind are synonymous. And remember, we said the mind is synonymous with the crap that we carry around in our heads, our burdens. What do other people think of me? You know? Am I good enough? Am I faking it well enough, right? All of this stuff is synonymous. And if you can see that the person and the mind and the crap are synonymous, you'll probably have a lot more willingness to start letting go of that. I paused for a moment because I was trying to remember what makes us hold on to it. Why do we hold on to it? And the only answer I can really come up with is because we think it's important to hold on to it. Like we think we'll somehow lose something if we let go of it. Like if I let go of worrying about whether you like me or not, then you won't. I'm going to lose. If I let go of controlling my life, then it's going to be chaos. I'm going to lose. Right? We think we're going to lose something. We think we're going to suffer.
And what's the payoff, really?
If we let go of seeing things as important. And it is true we're going to lose something. We're going to lose the crap, the burdens, the mind. And we're going to gain, not really gain, just unveil the open, spontaneous, free self, truth, knowing. I forgot my own term, so I'm scrolling up to look at it again. Present, shining self, innocence. All right, my time's up. So have fun with that, guys. And I'll see you in a moment as we discuss Kumari. Bye.